is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And with us this afternoon, of course, this evening, is Barry Shamish. And Barry certainly is an investigative reporter who worked in Israel for 30 years, exposing the corruption that was going on over there. And because he was getting so close to the heart of the very evil, certainly, that controls that unfortunate country, why he was forced to come to the United States, really because of certainly threats against his life and danger to his life. But, of course, one of the subjects that Barry writes about is the Sabbatean Jewish movement. And you can't understand modern-day anti-Semitism unless you understand the Sabbatean and Frankish Jewish movement. And even most Jews don't understand it. And yet it's seminal to understanding everything going on, certainly in Israel and the Jewish religion, and going on throughout the world today. It is a key to an understanding of many of the problems we face. Barry Shamish, you pick up the story.
Yeah, I'm going to dive. It's a tough one. If you've never heard a real history before and you get slammed with this, you kind of deny it. But it's real. But before I get started, there were other things going on, and normally I would have concentrated on them. So let me just get these out of the way. Oh, and by the way, boy, my personal life, I had these Bosnians in the apartment above me. They drove me mad for 4 months. Today I was subject to vandalism, weird stuff. But if anything happens to me, just remember the Bosnians who lived above me, the apartment above me, just have it in the back of your mind if anything happens to me. They did it. And by the way, I don't know that, you know, you get Muslim Bosnians, they had a terrible record of massacres. And they're in the States, and they're really not a healthy addition to the American population. Just to let you know, personal experience. Now, I'm going to go over two quick things before we dive. This one is important, and I don't have the answers. The Pope canceled his visit to Israel in May. Why? Boy, is it out there. I'm trying to find out the real reason, but he canceled his visit to Israel. It was all set. He had the mass in Bethlehem all prepared. Whatever. It's all canceled. And strangely, he's coming to the States. I don't know if there's a connection, but I'll tell you, this visit that got canceled, there is a story, and we're not being told what it really is, and I'm looking. And finally, before I dive, Arut Shevin, that's INN News, which gave us about the only half-honest news in English from Israel about what was done to the territories and religious Jews and so on and so forth. Suddenly, it got changed, and it's no longer providing the honest news. We don't know why. I'll be looking into that in the... Oh, I hear the music already.
You go right ahead, Barry. You leave that up to me.
All righty. Those are for the future. Now let's go in today's lecture. It combines, first of all, my good friend Rabbi Antelman. 20 years. I mean, it was a long friendship. He phoned week after week. He phoned me. He actually felt I had information he wanted to know, but he slowly got me interested. And, well, he wrote a book called To Eliminate the Opiate, The War of the Sabbateans Against Religious Jewry.
I think I read that back in the 1970s. But he's been around for a long time. That's Rabbi Antelman. We'll be back in a moment.
While the storm clouds gather all across
You know, an odd coincidence. You know, the more I think about little things, maybe there is divinity behind him. I don't know. But the articles kind of coalesced. Rabbi Ampelman died a couple of months ago. I was going to look some way to give him an epitaph that fit him. And one thing led to another, and I have a new video on YouTube. Just go into YouTube, Chamish, that's Chamish. It's only a week old. It's on Shabtai Tzvi and the Sabbateans. And, well, the technician was in my home, and out it came, and then we started looking, well, at a memoriam for Rabbi Ampelman. I think we have it. Now, please get ready. Marvin Ampelman, that was his name. We were really friends, the real thing. But more than that, in retrospect, I say to you, he was my soulmate and my mentor. I didn't know it, and I'm going to be, you know, your friends. You don't view someone as your mentor. You view him as your friend. Well, that's how I viewed him, but it took a long time, but he, in the end, convinced me that, in fact, the Jews had been taken over in the 17th century, and it has been a disaster. And it led straight to Zionism, the only one at the time, labor Zionism. Now, look, folks, I know your listeners, not all of them have this background, so I'm going to do my best for you. This is the real war against the Jews and against humanity. It's a mess. But let's start with one fact that I won't repeat till later. In 1932, how many organizations in Germany represented the Jews? Over 250.
Hold that thought, Barry. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Barry Shamish, and we're going to be talking about the Sabbatean Jews. And basically, of course, Barry had a friend. His name was Rabbi Antelman, and I've known Rabbi Antelman probably for 40 years or more. And he has certainly written about the Sabbatean Jews. And certainly he was in a regular communication with Barry, and eventually was able to get Barry to understand that there is within Jewry another movement, which was really not apparent, isn't apparent to most Jews, but is known as the Sabbatean Jews. And basically, according to Barry, the Sabbateans took over, organized, certainly, Jewry or Zionism back in the
17th century. No. Let's not get lost.
Go right ahead. You explain
it. Let's do Rabbi Antelman's account. In the year 1666, June 18th, and by the way, that is Catholic numerology. You know, June's the sixth month, and 18th is six times three, and 1666, we don't have to tell you about. He declared he was the Messiah of the Jews.
And this was a fellow named,
Shabtai Tzvi.
Right, go ahead.
This was from Gaza, by the way, which was Turkish territory. At the time, until the British got it. Let's not get confused. I'm really trying to simplify this. The weird part was over half the Jews of the world accepted him as the Messiah. And it wasn't small-time stuff. They sold their goods, their worldly goods. They climbed mountains and expected to be transported to the New Jerusalem. Really, I'm telling you, that's what actually happened. Thousands and thousands of Jews accepted Shabtai Tzvi as the Messiah. Now look, it gets complicated. Way back in 1666, what has the power to spread this new Messiah to Jews? All the books say from Iran to Mexico. There was only one organization that had a worldwide network that could do it, and that was the Vatican. And this is going to become very, very blatant if you follow the logic. And I'm going to say it again. You have to start anew. Look, everyone knows that Shabtai Tzvi was forced in September of 1666 by the Sultan. The Turks forced him to become a Muslim. And he agreed.
And he was either going to become a Muslim or they were going to do him in. Was that it?
Do them in slowly.
Right.
There are decent deaths and there are really rotten ones. They promised him a really rotten one. And he caved in and he became a Muslim and he died a Muslim. Most Jews abandoned him. All the Jews of Europe abandoned him. But in Turkey, there is a cult called the Donma. They felt that Shabtai Tzvi's conversion to Islam, that was a divine message. They would convert to Islam, but stay Sabbatean sort of on the weekend, all right? They would bluff that they were Muslims. And by the way, I'm not going to dive. I don't want to confuse your readers. Your listeners. But I met Turks in Israel who thanked the Jews for the wonderful movements that they've been running in Turkey. I said, what are you talking about? There aren't 50,000 Jews. They said, you're wrong. There are millions of Jews in Turkey. There's something going on. Turkey kept Shabtai Tzvi alive and created a brand new Messiah who was going to pretend he was someone else. And from the inside, worm his way into their thoughts. And, boy, if you look at Turkish history, all the way to the slaughter of the Armenians, a third of the nation, 1.5 million during the First World War, history becomes different. I can't help with that. If you care to look it up, the big, big change. Europe was not Sabbatean for about 80 years. And then the second Messiah, his name was Jacob Frank. He became, Shabtai number two. He became the new Messiah of Europe. But he was way more powerful. Look, Turkey and Europe, Europe was more influential. His followers were called Frankists. Now, here's where Rabbi Antelman, listen, I'm stubborn. It's not like I take new history lightly. It took me years to understand Rabbi Antelman. Even his books aren't obvious. Once I understood them, they became a lot more obvious. What he said was to corrupt the Jews. The Frankists first adopted kind of a humane policy. Now, here it gets, if you understand conspiracy, there were all kinds of theories behind the Rothschilds and the Jesuits. We're stuck with that. In the 18th century, with Rothschild money going towards the Frankists, and I add Jesuit power, that's not irrelevant. They've taken over the Vatican today. The Jesuit Pope canceled a visit to Israel. We don't know why. But let us go back once again to the 18th century. With Rothschild money and Jesuit power, something called the Enlightenment. If you're not Jewish, may not mean a lot to you. But it was the, you talk about loosening of Judaism. The Enlightenment was initiated by a German Jewish apostate. His name was Moses Mendelssohn. Now, from here on in, the entire story goes from Germany to Britain and then to America.
Well, now, basically, what part does Weishaupt play in this? What part does Frank play?
Weishaupt, he plays, well, you know, he was the Illuminati.
Right, and basically, you have Weishaupt, we have certainly Jacob Frank, and we have the Rothschild, and we have Mendelssohn. So all of these people are playing a part here in the 1700s, about 1776. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, it actually is.
Okay, go right ahead, because I think it's so important people understand how this all fits together. Go ahead.
Oh, if you... Good for you, I'll tell you.
Well, I read your treatise that you sent me, Barry. That's the reason I understand it. Because it is, it's confusing, and I'm just trying to make sure our listeners at least get a glimpse of what this is about. Go ahead.
You know what happened in 1789? Napoleon conquered Europe, but there was sort of a dictate. He liberated the Jews. In any land he conquered, the first thing he did was liberate the Jews. Look that up in your history books. Work it out. He started with Germany. Now, look, folks, it's not simple to understand that. But in Germany, the two biggest Jewish religious movements of the United States were formed, the Reform and the Conservative movements. They went from Germany, went to England, and off to America, and today every synagogue west of the Mississippi is Reformed. This began as a result of the Enlightenment. I know it's tough, especially if you don't even have an iota of Judaism, but it comes down to this. The Reform are the super, super liberal Jews. On a Friday, they debate whether to have their pork with cheese. All right? I mean, they've really drifted. That's what Judaism is in Western United States. The conservatives used to have Eastern United States, but they've weakened. I'm conservative, and my synagogue is on its last breath. Nice looking synagogue, but young people aren't there. And the Orthodox, the only ones who still live in a place where you don't have to drive to synagogue, they live in the mostly in the Northeast. They're the minority. The problem was the Jews weren't cooperating initially with the evil change to the way of, well, to Sabbateanism, all right. Let's talk about what they were supposed to be turned into. The fact is, Torah morality was stronger than Sabbateanism originally. It had to go. And that's where Rabbi Antelman's book tells us how it was not permitted to survive by the Sabbateans.
And so basically there was this foreign source, this foreign organization within Jewry, which most Jews don't even understand, but its whole purpose was to change the thrust of the Jewish religion, which it has. And certainly you have your Orthodox, you have your Conservative, you have your Reform, and what other, what's the other group?
That's it. Okay. There are smaller, but those are the big three.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment. But I think it's important that you understand, and certainly that we let the Jewish people understand what's happened to their religion. Just as there have been forces working in the Catholic and Protestant Church, so there are powerful forces working within Jewry to change it.
boy. Now, again, I'm not apologizing. I'm just warning. This is not the Judaism you believe, but it is the real one. And I can thank personally Rabbi. You know, in retrospect, I didn't know he was helping me to understand the world. Really, I didn't. He was just a friendly voice on a Thursday evening, and we talked for an hour, and somehow we got along for 20 years. So I didn't think at the time he was infiltrating my thinking. But look, you have to understand, European Jewish history wasn't good. You know, for 2,000 years, there were pogroms, there were crusades. Oh, and inquisitions, of course. That was aided by the Jesuits. But compared to what happened from the 1880s on, life was a picnic. Now, look, the turning point in the final war against the Jews was the founding of Zionism by the Sabbateans. Before Zionism got a religious angle and a right-wing angle, it was a socialist movement. The final aim of the movement was to establish a Sabbatean state in the land of the Jews, Israel, thus taking over Judaism for good. They wanted a new Judaism, their Judaism, and to get it, well, you had to keep the plot invisible to the victims, to the Jews. Life had to be made so intolerable for Europe's Jews that escape to Palestine would appear the best or the only option. In the 1880s, the Cossack pogroms were the first volley in this campaign. Now, it gets a bit complicated. The Frankists turned to the Jesuits and their influence over the Vatican to spread communism. Don't fool around with this. The Jesuit communes of South America were the original communism. Now they want to punish all the anti-papists of Europe, well, essentially by imprisoning them in a communist prison, which worked, by the way. Look, what it comes down to in the 1880s, the Jesuits provided the Cossacks who slaughtered Jews and made them run. The Frankists gave the communists, and the Rothschilds gave the money. That was the...
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan Berry simply pointing out how this all fits together, how the Rothschilds provided the money, and certainly how suddenly there's this been this movement within the Jewry. And basically, of course, they wanted to make life as impossible for the Jews as they could. Now, these are the Sabbatean Jews who are trying to create an impossible situation for Jews. Why? So that they will go to the Holy Land and establish the Sabbatean state. That was always the plan. But the only way you'd get the average Jew to be willing to give up a comfortable existence in Europe or wherever else it was he was living would be to make life so miserable for him. And that's, of course, why the Sabbateans, suddenly down the line, eventually worked with and helped the Nazis persecute the Jews and certainly facilitate the Holocaust. And to avoid this horror, why the Jews, at least some of them, were willing to pick up and move to Israel to begin to establish this Sabbatean Jewish state. Would that be a fair analysis?
Yeah, sure would. By the way, they didn't know it. They were being used, but what it comes down to is they had to have a movement that had to capture their imagination. While the Cossacks were slaughtering Jews, Zionism was born. Now, again, I repeat, in the German Jewish world, they invented Zionism. Now, in Vienna, these are names your listeners don't know, but the first, the opening salvo of Zionism was planted by a journalist. His name was Natan Birnbaum. Then came another Vienna writer, Perik Smoliskin. He provided, better intellectual justification for returning to a safe home in Israel. But they had no charisma. They found Theodor Herzl had immense charisma. I mean, he gathered crowds. He was the rock star. He was the Elvis of the Jewish world in the late 1880s. He could rally masses like nobody could. He was chosen to be Zionism's first spokesman and the symbol of the movement. But there was plenty behind that.
All right, now, what was his name again?
Theodor Herzl.
Okay, go right ahead.
Look, you read any biography of Herzl, and the same quandary appears. Herzl claimed he wrote the Judenstaat, the Jewish state, the classic, the Bible of secular Zionism. He claimed he wrote it in Paris in the summer, I think it was 1887, 88. It doesn't matter. In the summer in Paris, the problem is Herzl wasn't in Paris when the Judenstaat was written. Look, it had to have been written for him. Now, Herzl was a dreadful playwright. There are snippets of his plays around. How he could have departed from utter literary mediocrity to write a classic like the Judenstaat, that also should be asked. But Herzl was a complicated guy. Now, he went to Israel in 1898. In 1901, he went to Britain. Now, again, I repeat, Germany to Britain. That is where the Sabbatean Zionism arose. Germany to Britain. Look, Herzl went to Britain, and he would no longer support a Jewish sanctuary in Palestine. He saw it wouldn't work. He backed another option, creating a Jewish sanctuary in British-controlled East Africa. In those days, you could actually do that. It would have become Rhodesia, and it wouldn't have lasted long. Nonetheless, in those days, it could have been done. Herzl did not think a Palestinian Jewish state would work. And he told the Sabbateans of Britain that, and he died not long after, and not one biography tells us how. Not a one.
All right, of course, the inference is there that he may have been helped, but because he would not go along with the plan, and the plan was, of course, to establish the Jewish state in Palestine. Go right ahead.
Oh, we have time then. Look, Herzl went into a Paris sanatorium. We don't know why, but he never came out. He was 45 years old. But however he died, it was very fortunate for the British Freemasons who were doing the bidding of the Sabbateans, because they replaced Herzl with one of their own, German-educated Jew named Chaim Weizmann.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead.
Now, folks, again, all I can say is Chaim Weizmann was the leader of the Jewish agency. Now, this gets tricky. The Jewish Agency was the parliament, supposedly, of the Jews from 1919 all through the Holocaust. The problem, now this is not a small problem. Chaim Weizmann suddenly became the leader of all the Jews of the world and suddenly had a really strong influence on the British minister, the British foreign minister, Balfour. Now, this is important. First of all, why did Weizmann become the leader of all the Jews, and why did the British decide to back Palestine? One, a cockamamie legend was fabricated that involved Alfred Balfour and his declaration declaring, with great sympathy, the British government looks upon the creation of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. That came from the foreign ministry of the British Parliament. That came from Balfour. It was supposedly a reward for Weizmann, who was a chemist, who found a way to make acetone for explosives from dried-up paint. Not one explosion in World War I came from this magic process, but the British thwarted a million troops, if not more, to take Palestine from the Turks and then appoint the leaders of the upcoming Sabbatean state. Make no mistake about this. The British were there from day one. Weizmann was German-born and British-appointed. And keep that in mind.
Okay, well, hang on to that thought for just a minute, because I want our listeners to actually get the background of this. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, we're talking about Theodor Herzl, who goes off to England, and he meets with a fellow named James Balfour, and certainly...
No, Herzl didn't meet with him.
Who did?
Weizmann.
I'm sorry. Weizmann meets with Balfour. And
I mean, he might have, but it wasn't central.
Okay, but it's Weizmann, and basically, of course, Balfour then comes up with a statement that's certainly...
A government proclamation that Britain look with great sympathy to the creation of a Jewish homeland in the newly captured Palestine.
Now, this is during the First World War, is that right?
17 it was declared, 19 it became an actual fact.
Okay, fine. So basically, of course, this is the basis of the Balfour Declaration, that England is going to back turning Palestine over to the Jews for a Jewish state. Pick the story up from there.
Oh, boy. All right, why not pick it up from there? That is the state, but you have to look what Palestine was. Now, remember, there were very serious writers who visited Palestine before the British captured it from the Turks. Oh, Twain and Balzac, they both noted the paucity of Arabs in the land. What happened, well, at the time, the majority population of major centers like Jerusalem and Sfat and Tiberias, they were Orthodox Jews. Now, the myth of an ancient Palestinian Arab indigenous population is a bunch of baloney. And if you say that, you're anti-Arab or whatever you are, but it's a bunch of baloney. When the British began their Palestinian enterprise, you had Arabs coming from all over the Middle East for jobs. It's a mess, but the real fact is the religious Jews were the majority of the Jews, at least. They were 100% of the Jews in Palestine. And many had been living in the land since antiquity. What they did, Balfour and Weizmann, they started they began by appointing Rabbi Avraham Cook. Now, he was the first chief rabbi of this enterprise. Well, of course, Weizmann was the first head of the Jewish agency. Cook proceeded to strip the Orthodox Jews of their real estate and their political rights, and he introduced a new concept into Judaism, the purity of land redemption. Now, again, it sounds small. It's big. The religious Jews were stripped of their land and their rights. And Judaism,
I'm sorry, was this in Palestine you're speaking of?
Where else?
All right, go ahead.
Where else?
Well,
Weizmann.
Go ahead.
Right. All right. And again, the philosophy of land redemption might have been very profound, but these Jews were playing out a Sabbatean nightmare. Now look, stage one was complete. That is, the British got the Turks out of Palestine and declared it a Jewish homeland. Stage one. But the Jews, this is where Rabbi Ampelman put everything in perspective. For me and others, President Woodrow Wilson was thoroughly corrupted by the Frankists, and he traced it through his buddy Colonel House. Wilson put an end to America's open immigration policy. Until then, despite all their despair, most Eastern European Jews rejected Palestine as an escape. They chose mostly America as their destination, almost 2 million of them. From Wilson's change of policy, very, very few would enjoy that option. It had to be from here on in, Palestine or nowhere. Big jump, big jump. Now, let's jump all the way to 1933, and this is the transfer agreement. Now, I'm going to say, for those who are listening to me seriously, Edwin Black wrote the great book on the transfer agreement, though today let's just say, it was his great book. Maybe 50 pages were on the deal, but it's devastating. The labor Zionists under Chaim Weizmann cut a deal with the German Nazis. Now look, Jews tried to escape Nazism throughout the 30s by boat to Latin and North American ports. There was an international order. You turn them back. Any German Jew who rejected Palestine as his shelter would be shipped back to his death. And there have been many movies about this inexplicable. How could it be that all countries turn back Jews? And by the way, Jews were pretty good for economies. How did they all agree to this? It's not. Rabbi Entelman understood way more than what has seeped through the Jewish mind.
And I think the point that Barry is making, it really needs to be reiterated. Certainly when the Nazis start coming to power in Germany, why the Jews want to get away? They realize it's an anti-Semitic society, and so they want to come to America. But suddenly orders have come out that they're not to be allowed to come to America. Then efforts are made to...
Not America. America was almost closed entirely by Wilson.
Right.
But they did have Latin America, and they did have Canada. Supposedly, they wouldn't be rejected by everyone. The boats hopped from port to port and then straight back to Europe. And and their death.
In other words, basically, there was no way they could get away. And this was carefully coordinated by the people who wanted to force them to go to Palestine. In other words, it was either go to Palestine or go back to Germany and be slaughtered. That was the transfer agreement. Go ahead.
Yeah. If you want to do it in one line, not bad. There was more to it. Look, let's just jump to 1933. Less than 1% of German Jews supported Zionism. All right, understand that. But by 1934, there was only one legal organization made legal by Hitler's Nazis, labor Zionism. That's it. The other 250 were shut down at the point of a gun. Now understand, all the way to 1941, labor Zionism worked in Nazi Germany. Now, look, if you want confirmation of the conspiracy, read the transfer agreement by Evan Black, or Perfidy by Ben Hecht. I'll talk about that someday. Also, a very, very revealing book. My books, by the way, and then there's The Scared and the Doomed by Jacob Nuremberger. Jews have opened their mouths. We tried to get to the truth. We've been dealt with, all right? Leave it at that. Ben Hecht, my God, he was run over in 1941 on the sidewalks of Manhattan, no less. Without diving in, if a Jew opened his mouth, well, he paid for it.
In other words, what you're suggesting is that Ben Hecht tried to get the truth out about what was going on.
Yeah, he wrote Perfidy.
They tried to run him down on the streets of New York. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was in 1951.
Okay.
We're talking about the deal between the labor Zionists and their rep, Rudolf Kastner, who flew to Hungary, where 800,000 Jews were in the hands of Adolf Eichmann, and he dressed in Nazi uniforms, he went to death camps, it was god-awful. They saved 3,500. Eichmann said, to hell with that, I'll save them all, give me 700 trucks, and you can have all of them. And remember, the British shut the borders of Palestine, and yet Eichmann could allow them to go to Palestine. It's such a British-German controlled by Sabbatean plot, destroying the Jews of Europe. Only 100,000 Jews survived where Nazis arrived. 6 million died, including, well, my family. My grandfather had 11 brothers and sisters. Him and one brother survived. It's awful. It's a nightmare. But this is what was happening. Ben Hecht, I think, you know, I don't know the exact day, but didn't die a normal death. He was just walking down the sidewalk when he was run down on the sidewalk. The fact of the matter is Jews have tried to tell the story, and it's so damn shocking. They didn't know what to do with the knowledge they got, but it came out. What we're talking about is the British banned the white paper. That, essentially, in 1939, the labor Zionists in their camps in Europe were professional Jews. You're talking lawyers, doctors type Jews were trained to be farmers. They were shipped to Palestine, about 80,000. This was the seed stock of the new Jew. And this is where Chaim Weizmann, head of the Jewish Agency, from 1935 on, said there's going to be a Holocaust. He used the word Shoah, a Holocaust. Only 2 million will survive, but they'll be strong and good for Eretz Israel. He knew it was coming. look, when I say this, I'm not being overdramatic. Look, folks, get my books. Can I plug them now? If you don't get my books, you won't be able to follow them.
All right, fine. Why don't you tell our listeners how to get in touch with you, how to get in touch with your books, how to listen to your radio program, and how to get your PayPal button. Let's put a plug in right now for Barry Samish.
I think you should read to understand truly the myths you've been fed and bought. There is a very, very gory and ugly side to Jewish history from 1880 on. Look, my books are all at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. Oh, no, 8 of 9, write Shamish, and you'll get to my books. The latest one is called The Stinger, Not the Stung. Well, you have to write in Shamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, The Stinger, Not the Stung, and you'll get the story. My website is barrychamish.com. I do need a webmaster. I'll fix that soon. And there is a PayPal button on barrychamish.com. Folks, anyone who contributes to me, I don't forget. I remember you. All right, let's go back.
And what to tell them how to get to your radio program.
Well, it's on tomorrow night, First Amendment Radio, from 6 to 8 Eastern Time. And if anyone's listening to this in rebroadcast, libertyarchives.com, that's the show for a week.
Okay,
All right. Oh, by the way, I'm going to add one last thing, maybe the most important. I give a one-hour lecture on Shabtai Tzvi. It's only a week old. Go to YouTube and write in Shamish. You'll find it. It's the latest one. It's on Shabtai Tzvi. All right, now let's go back to what is going on. I'll sum it up. The British banned immigration. What was it? A month before World War II broke out, something like that. The labor Zionists got the Jews they wanted. But the millions of religious Jews and all the non-Frankists in Europe were left to perish without a struggle for their survival. Now, just so you understand, oh, it's terrible when you find out, sure, the Nazis were butchers and they were heartless, but they were working with the labor Zionists, but not all Jews were labor Zionists. A very noble alternative Zionism led by Zev Jabotinsky demanded free passage to Palestine, demanded a world economic boycott of the Nazis, demanded a Jewish army to defend themselves. Well, in short, well, they were boycotted, thrown out of the Jewish agency in 1933. It's something called the Arlazarov scandal. We won't dive into it. It was a setup, but then only labor Zionism supposedly enforced the rules of Jews worldwide. And believe me, Jews worldwide were not socialist labor Zionism. Now, the first thing they did, they forced the German Jews that they got to Palestine to use their assets to buy only goods from Nazi Germany. That may not seem like a it. Look, 80,000 fairly prosperous Jews all buying just Nazi products. It kept the regime afloat for a while. And then, look, Weizmann, the Jewish agency, they neutralized Jabotinsky. He died in 1941. We won't dive into that one. But you have this plot going on within Jewry. Sabbateanism, Frankism were working against the Jews, not for the Jews.
Okay, go right ahead.
Oh, good. Well, we're going to dive to the Holocaust a very, very depressing topic for me. You, first of all, how much time do we have left?
Oh, we've only got about 3 minutes. We're going to take just a little quick break here, and we'll be back in just a moment. Our guest, of course, is Barry Shamish. We're talking about the transfer agreement. We're talking certainly about the labor Zionists who actually worked with the Nazis and actually certainly wanted the Holocaust because they wanted to force at least a small number of Jews to go to Israel to establish this Sabbatean state. We'll be back in a moment. Go right ahead, and we're going to get you back on maybe later this week, because I really want to get this information out. We're going to have to go over it several times, because it's difficult for people to understand, but we've got about 2.5 minutes for you to finish up. Go ahead.
Look, I'm not going to throw in the Jesuits, even though they run the Vatican. Today, the Vatican, after World War II, made good the escape of over 100,000 Nazis. They saved the Nazis. They sent them mostly to South America, but plenty to the United States. They hid them in their seminaries. They gave them phony IDs, and they got them out of Germany. And think about it, folks. How many Nazis has Israel convicted of their crimes? One. You have to understand the history. It doesn't make sense. Why would the Jewish state convict one Nazi in all its history? And that was Eichmann, and that was to shut him up over again. The Kastner business in Hungary in 1944, put him in a soundproof booth and shut him up and supposedly killed him. I don't even know if that's true, honest to God. But the fact is, we returned to America where the Jewish leadership used all their contacts and resources to make good and certain that the unwanted non-Sabbateans of Europe, the Jews, the non-Frankists, never again saw the light of day. Only the small Orthodox defended their people from almost a complete massacre. And that's the ugly story in a nutshell.
Okay, fine. Well, I guess it's been Barry Shamish, and Barry, I'll be calling you tomorrow. We'll line up a program, and then we'll sort of pick this up, because I think it's so vitally important that people understand what is really going on and understand that they must begin to put it together. Most of what we've certainly learned through our history textbooks, most of what we see on television, certainly is not accurate. I want to thank you for everything you do, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
My pleasure, I assure you. Night all.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope, of course, that you enjoyed this. Certainly, Barry Shamish. We do have a short conversations there during the break, and we're going to put this together into a 4-CD set, because we think it's vitally important that you understand the Sabbatean Jews, and there's nobody who understood this better than Rabbi Antleman, who'd written about this. And then, of course, his taught Barry Shamish, and Barry certainly is the world's leading expert on this, and you cannot understand hardly anything going on today unless you understand the Sabbatean Jews, the Frankish Jews, and then, of course, this modern-day labor Zionist movement. And never confuse Zionism with labor Zionism. Many people are Zionists who believe in a Jewish homeland, but they're not labor Zionists, because the labor Zionists are certainly a truly demonic portion of the Jewish faith. And Cindy works with other subversive movements in the world today. Well, this is the time when I certainly want to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And we do hope if you're out there, you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or certainly help us maintain our network of stations by purchasing our tapes or DVDs or books, or joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, which you do by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have certainly a wonderful 4-CD set with Barry Shamish. It's called The Return of the Giants. And certainly this goes into the fact that actually for a period for almost 10 years in Israel, certainly between the 1980s and 1990s, there were giants in Israel, and many people saw them. Barry went around and interviewed the people who saw the giants, and Barry doesn't know what to make out of this because, of course, he's not coming from the point of view that we are as Christians, recognize the supernatural and mystical nature of some of the things going on. But Barry certainly does a wonderful job. And in this 4-CD set, The Return of the Giants, we certainly hope that many of you will want to get it and watch it and begin to understand certainly the mystical part of what's going on. So again, the 4-CD set is The Return of the Giants. And now we have our new 4-CD set on Hitler. Did Hitler escape? And there you'll hear my interviews with Dr. Jerome Corsi, certainly with Harold Cooper, certainly with Gerard Williams, and certainly 1/4 interview. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Did Hitler escape? And the answer is yes. Well, if he escaped, then why doesn't everybody know that? Why weren't efforts made, of course, to track him down? And you must understand that Adolf Hitler was deeply involved in the occult. In fact, the entire Nazi movement was funded by occultists here in the United States. First of all, we have a 4-CD set. It's entitled The War Against the Jews. It's my interviews with John Loftus. That's The War Against the Jews. And, of course, John had written a book called The Secret War Against the Jews. Another excellent book called America's Nazi Secret. America's Nazi Secret, which we recommend these books to you. John Loftus had a security clearance 3 levels above top secret. And most of the information he learned, he could not release until, well, basically when the statute of limitations was up. People from the intelligence agency called John and said, John, you've got to get this information out. You've written other books, but you've left out some of the most important things. So write a book and explain how certainly the American government helped the Nazis. How certainly we helped the Nazis, we financed the Nazis before the war, during the war, and then helped them escape after the war. That 4-CD set, The War Against the Jews, the book, certainly America's Nazi Secret, America's Nazi Secret. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. But the 4-CD set, if you're only going to get one, get Did Hitler Escape? Did Hitler escape? And we hope that you'll get that information out because we want people to understand they've been lied to, the media is controlled, education is controlled, our reality is controlled, and then please pray for Radio Liberty.